Hello and welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell, of course, doing a lot of production and so on. And we've got the Salem News sports writers coming up tomorrow here on MSO that Bill Newell hosts. In the meantime, we'll be talking tonight with some Fall 2 sports. I don't even know if it's called Fall 2 with the Greater Boston League, is it, Tim?
I have no idea.
Not me either. But anyway, we'll start with old...
I tried to figure out a while ago.
Yeah. We'll start with old friend Luke Ciccatelli of the Revere High School football team. We've talked with Lynn Classical head coach Chris Brian Vaughn and with Lynn English High School football coach Chris Carroll. We've talked with them this week about starting up in the Greater Boston League, and they're going to have a four-game schedule. So we'll talk with Coach Ciccatelli about that in a minute. Also be checking in later on with Scott Cooper, sports writer, primarily writing right now for the Marblehead Reporter, and he'll tell us a little bit about what he has seen with the Marblehead Magicians, who have just been lights out in the Northeastern Conference. We'll also talk with Gary Larrabee, a little golf, a little sports history, and then check in with Mike Grenier on the Celtics. And I've got calls out to numerous people, as we'll be checking in with a lot of Northeastern Conference and Cape Ann League high school football coaches this week who are wrapping up Fall 2 as we get ready for the spring sports season that starts in the Cape Ann League and the Northeastern Conference next week, but that's going to be 3 or 4 weeks away for the Greater Boston League. So this continues. It's going to continue probably right into July, which is great for us, and we're excited about that. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Rick. Thank you.
All right. Well, you know, we've got Coach Ciccatelli lined up for right at the top of the hour, so why don't we take our quick break right now and see if we can get a hold of him. And again, this is North Shore Sports Night. Happy you're with us on this Monday evening. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back. Coach Ciccatelli, not available at the moment. We'll see if we can check with him in a little while. So, Tim, what catches your eyes? I mean, you did go to, Swampscott Beverly over the weekend, that football game?
Yeah, I went to Swampscott Beverly. Just a outstanding defensive effort by Swampscott. Phil Stacey wrote about it today in the Salem News. Beverly had his opportunities in the second half, but just couldn't find a way to get into the end zone. Went fourth and goal twice inside the 5 yard line. I got stuffed by Swampscott, and then they had a chance in the last minute, and they Swampscott managed to snuff that out as well. Though they just can't seem to get on track. They can move the ball. They just haven't been able to punch it into the end zone with enough regularity here. But. It was a strange game, you know. It was a game that you weren't expecting to play on a Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. It had been moved from the night before. Just had a really strange feel about it. Swampscott led throughout the game, though. And just looking real, real confident right now. And, of course, we've seen this 100 times, and I asked Coach Peter Bush about it. How long were they going to throw that quarterback slant? Because they did it again. In the third quarter, went for a touchdown for about 40-plus yards. Receiver came in on the snap, cut down the line of scrimmage, cut across into the middle. Quarterback dumped a perfect pass, caught him in stride, and the kid turned up the field and then headed to the left corner of the end zone, untouched.
Hmm.
How many times have we seen that before? You know? But yep. They get it down pat, I'll tell you.
I've heard a lot of this goal line defense this year, and I don't know what that is, but there seems to be a rash of that or an outbreak of that. A lot of that stuff where the defense just seems to be digging in and preventing the other teams from going in. St. John's Prep has been the victim of that, and a lot of other schools as well.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a mentality that you're not going to let them, you know, get into the end zone, and it's a result of play call where they don't stress the defense to create gaps. You're trying to push right up the middle, and if you know you can stuff those gaps with your linebackers, you got a really good chance of stopping the offense. And we've seen a lot of it. Definitely got victimized by it twice.
Yeah.
And again, they kept creating chances for themselves. That's the thing. The backup quarterback hit a couple of outstanding sideline throws to get them deep into Slumpkin territory. Just couldn't cash them in.
Well, we've got a big Thanksgiving Day coming up game. Thanksgiving Day game coming up here this week with Marblehead and Swampscott. And we're going to talk with Scott Cooper a little bit later on about Marblehead. But the Big Blue, Tim, in the three games that they've played, they've scored 104 points and allowed 12. That's quite a disparity. On the other hand, Marblehead, in the six games that they've won, 6-0, they've scored 199 points and allowed 51. So these look like two evenly matched teams, at least on paper.
You have reached the maximum time permitted for recording your message. If you are satisfied with your message, press 1. To listen to your message, press 2. To erase, re-record.
Yeah, this is the problem with this conference call. That's me. That's the conference call. Hopefully.
Are you still there? You have reached
the
maximum time permitted for recording your
message. Let me get back to you. Yeah, I don't know how to hang that thing up on the other line on the conference call without hanging up on you. So what I did was I recorded the call to Coach Ciccatelli, but apparently it kept recording, so there you go. Anyway, we're talking about the match this weekend between Marblehead and Swampscott, and it should be a beauty.
Yeah, it really should. It should be a classic, much like the games we used to see towards the end of the season 5-6 years ago. When they were battling for the playoff spot, and they would take turns knocking each other off, which is good to see, because they're two programs with a tremendous of tradition, of heritage, of just really entertaining games, especially on Thanksgiving.
All right, hold on, Tim. I think Coach Ciccatelli is checking in. Hold on, let's see if this works. Be right back. Good Lord willing. Hello, Coach.
Hey, Rick.
How are you?
I'm okay. How about you?
All right. We're good. Let me see if I got Tim here. I'm all messed up trying to engineer this thing myself. Coach Lou Ciccatelli is on the line. Coach Tim Kearns is with us, I think.
I am.
There we go.
Hi, Lou.
Did I lose you, Lou? You're kidding me.
You're unbelievable.
You're kidding me. Hold on. Be right back. Let's try it again.
I lost you there.
No, I'm trying to figure this thing out with the conference call. I don't know if I lose somebody, how to get the other guy back. You press the button and things drop off. But anyway, Tim is here, Lou is here, and we're all happy. And Tim, you can say hi to Lou once again.
Hi, Lou.
Tim, what's up, buddy? Good to hear from you guys.
We got to make a time. I'm going to send you a text where we can get her either before or after practice and chew the fat a little.
Yeah, anytime, absolutely. You know that. Okay. Miss you guys. Are you kidding me?
Coach, we've missed everybody, and it's just so weird. First of all, I got to tell you, Lou, you're leaving the NEC was sad. It's like your best friend moving overseas. However, you're still right there, so we'll check in with you all the time. And the same thing is happening with classical and English. But
English, sure.
That all said, Lou, I can't even, I don't even know where to start to ask you because this thing has been so wild, but the chance that the kids have to play some football right now, in the GBL, I think is pretty cool the way this whole thing has been manipulated and worked out by athletic directors, coaches, and kids and so on.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. We're just all thankful, you know, to have the kids have a chance to play. I'll tell you, I honestly didn't think it was going to happen. And I can't believe that we're going to be playing on Friday night. You know, we finally got there and hopefully we play every game, four games that we're scheduled to play. But, yeah, I mean, as a coaching staff and, you know, the kids, we're all just thankful that, we got a chance to get some closure.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to play it close to the vest and play it safe. Newburyport just got canceled, its final week in all sports. And, you know, they were looking forward to their quote Thanksgiving Day game, unquote. But, before I turn it over to Tim, tell me a little bit, Lou, about how this preseason is going, how you've kept in touch with the kids since September or since August and how this whole thing is playing out.
Sure. So, you know, basically, I mean, you know, right when season ended, we gave the guys a month off, as we always do, and we went right to Zoom. I mean, we had weekly meetings, basically, right away, you know, hopefully getting ready for the season. And, the kids are great. We had, you know, the meetings went well. You know, we talked about different things that they could do because obviously they couldn't get to a gym. So we try to get them into the gym. We try to get them into some workout sessions at their home and whatnot. And so we were prepared for that. I mean, that was a good thing. And then, you know, again, just a chance to put it all back together and, you know, practice the last couple of weeks, you know, has been great. The kids are happy. We're happy. And, like you said, we just want to make sure that we get to play those four games and we're trying to do everything we can carefully. So we'll see.
Tim.
Coach, how is it that you guys are starting your fall too later than everybody else? How did that come about?
Yeah. So basically what happened was all of those towns, more or less, especially the Linz and Revere, especially, we were really, really high in the red zone with COVID. So everything got shut down and got pushed back. So that's kind of what happened. And, you know, all the GBL teams, Everett, the two English teams, I don't know what Medford's numbers were like. I know some of them had a real bad bout with it too, but Revere's numbers were so high, that they canceled sports for a little bit. And when they picked it back up, they had to move everything around.
Okay. So it's just a matter of working around the COVID numbers.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it was because the city, bottom line is when those numbers had to be under, I think it was like 5% or whatever. I forget the number, but yeah, it had to be that or they wouldn't let us play.
All right. Coming off the last season that you had, how have you kept the kids focused on the mission of the new season?
Yeah. So again, a lot of Zoom meetings, you know, a lot of contact that way. And just to believe and try to do the right. I'll tell you, I'll back up for a second. I'll be honest with you. I told the kids, if they really, really wanted to play a football season this year, the biggest thing they had to do was make a commitment to the team, to each other, and they had to wear their masks, and they had to practice social distancing when they weren't at practice, when they were with their friends. Because, let's be honest, that's where it was all, a lot of it was spreading. You see, a lot of programs are getting shut down. It wasn't because kids weren't doing the right thing at practices and whatnot, but they were doing the wrong thing. I think, you know, they're kids, high school kids.
See, Coach, that's part of, in my opinion, that's part of the self-discipline that you instill in these kids as a football coach. Because, you know, when you're away, when nobody's looking, you can do certain things. And you're telling them, no, you can't.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, Rick. I mean, and that was the biggest battle. I told them, you want to play? You're going to promise me you'll do your best to try to do the right thing. And if you can, you'll have a better chance. You know, like you said, new reports getting shut down, all those other schools. That's exactly what happened. Kids go to parties, whatever they're doing. Guess what? You won't make it. There's just no way. So we've been lucky. We've been fortunate so far, knock on wood, but still a long way to go.
Lou, you know, the winter sports season, and I'm sorry, Tim, I'll give it back to you in a second here, but the winter sports season just ended for the GBL, and it was very successful, particularly for the Lynn schools. They did very well. Do you have any kids who played winter sports who are now transitioning over to football?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We've got about five or six basketball players. You know, so we had to kind of wait around for them. They came a little bit late, actually, to practice and whatnot when it first started. But, yeah, they've been great. They were very, very lucky. I think they got one game changed or postponed a few days. But they were lucky. They got through the season, and hopefully they were doing all the, you know, the things right, I guess, to, you know, to make that happen. But, yeah, I mean, so far so good. We've been, you know, lucky thus far finishing. I know the hockey team ran into a problem down the stretch. They had a little bit of COVID going through it. They missed like three games at the end of the season, which sucks, but you know, that it did happen, you know, and it could happen to anyone.
Tim?
Well, you know, it certainly drives the point home. You ask the kids to make the commitment, and then to see other teams, even in your own school, all of a sudden, you know, push the sideline because there was somebody who didn't pay attention to the one or a group of individuals who didn't think team. You know, and they cross themselves. That's the hard part.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And like I said, you know, again, I give a lot of credit to my coaches, you know. I mean, we're a very, very, you know, tight-knit group. We're either talking to the kids on chat or we're talking to the kids on Zoom meetings, and we're preaching that a lot to them. I still preach it. You know, they want to finish the football season, do the right thing at night, do the right thing after practice.
All right, where are you guys right now in terms of practice and guys coming back, your leaders and so on?
Yeah, so we're in like everyone else. I think it's our second week, and right now, so we open up Friday night against Classical. I mean, it's a brutal schedule when you think about it. Classical, English, Everett, and then Medford.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a tough. Those are all good football games. We're actually on the road. We're on the road this week, Friday night at 6 o'clock at Manning Field.
All right, I'll see you there.
We've got 20 seniors coming back this year. You know, 10 or 8 that were impact players on both sides of the ball. So, you know, I think we're going to be okay. You know, we've had great practices. Of course, one of our leaders, Calvin Boudreau, my quarterback, we're looking for real big things from him this year. He started as a freshman, and he's just progressed and gotten better every year, and this is his year. And even though it's four games, he's looked very, 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 very good at practice.
Well, you know, with four games, this is, I'm sure you guys are looking at this like, okay, every game is a playoff game. This is it. Every game, you know, is our a playoff game. And that you so many times coaches have said, well, this could be our last game due to, you know, whatever. And so the kids have to focus on that on the one hand. But on the other hand, you're still out there, Lou, teaching his kids, getting ready for the next thing. So are you trying to do something a little bit different with practice in terms of attitude than you would if you had, say, an 11- or 12-game season?
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, you know, the biggest thing, again, is safety. We do a protocol, like I'm sure all teams do. We have to do a checklist every day and ask kids questions, and they have to answer them the correct way, or, you know, you got to make some moves. But, yeah, I mean, the kids are really focused. Albeit it's only four games, a lot of coaches are looking at it. I'm looking at it as a spring football kind of idea, too. But, you know we owe it to the seniors to do our best, like you said earlier. And, you know, every game is a playoff game because I've got 20 seniors coming back. We had a great year last year. And these kids want to win. They want to win. So we're obviously going to try our hardest to go 4-0. And you know, I think that's important. It's important to the kids. And that's number one. But in the meantime, I've got 50 kids. You know, that was the most. I had to let a few kids go, but I kept some young freshmen and sophomores. And guess what? They just want to be a part of it. Even through all this, they just want to be a part of it. They know there's no JV games. There's no freshman games. But they want to be a part of Revere football. And for that, I'm grateful. And honestly, I couldn't ask for more from them this year.
Mm-hmm.
Lou, did you lose any kids from last year's team who are spring athletes who said, geez, coach, you know, it's such a cram time schedule that I've got to pick and choose and I'm going with the spring team?
Believe it or not, no. No, not one. Nope. Not one kid. So we were fortunate. Everybody that played last year, just about everybody came back.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
It is. We're lucky. You know, I mean, they like me. I'm a funny guy. I make practice.
That's good. Yeah, we like your Facebook post too, Coach, you know, so.
Oh, I have a lot of fun.
What's your practice schedule this week?
So we're usually there. Tomorrow we're hitting the weight room before practice. But other than that, we're there at 3. We're off the field by 6.
Okay.
All right, Coach, you mentioned one or two of your kids. Mention a couple of others of your guys that you look for leadership in this really shortened season, but, you know, they want to get out there and display what they have.
Absolutely. Leadership would be my captains. Calvin is one of my captains, Calvin Boudreau. Adeteo Edetebi, my running back, linebacker, another captain. John Tron, linebacker and running back. And Ryan Doucette. He is a tight end and a defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of leadership right there. Let me get that right. Ala Atatui, my nose and my right offensive guard. He's been a four-year player for me, and he is probably one of the best linemen I've had in a long time. He started as a sophomore. So, again, he was an all-star last year, and looking for leadership from him on and off the field also.
Love hearing about those linemen. Tim?
Where's the running back from last year? Joey?
Ginepra. Billy Ginepra.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I thank God. I almost missed him. Yeah, Billy. Oh, Billy. I know you're talking about Joe Lyles, but I want to talk about Billy Ginepra is another kid.
Yeah.
He's my other running back. He's a senior. And he was kind of in the shadows of Joe last year. You know, I think a lot of them were, and Joe had an amazing career. But Billy Ginepra and Adetail, they're very, very good running backs. And the two of them, we're looking for them to really, really have a good shot season this year. But Joe right now took a year off. He's taking some classes, and he's planning on transferring. He's looking at, like, Endicott or Framingham State. He just wants to play football.
Oh, yeah. Framingham State's a great place to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good football down there.
We got a couple of kids going there this year. So
yeah, a lot of kids from Gloucester made their way down there and had a really good career because they made the right decision. They went to a school where they were going to play.
And that's the truth. I tell it. Isn't it the truth? I tell the kids that all the time. Go somewhere where you're going to have fun, you're going to have a great experience, and more importantly, you're going to get some playing time.
Coach, this might be an unfair question because most coaches are too busy with other things, but do you know what the fan situation is as to who will be able to go to your home games?
Yeah, I do. So what they're, and they're sticking by it, it's two, at Revere, it's two per kid.
Mm-hmm.
So two fans per kid. Manning Bowl, I believe, is doing the same thing, I was told.
Okay. Now, can the visiting team bring their kids? I mean their parents?
Can they bring their, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, if you're going to Manning, can Revere parents go, the two parents per kid?
Yes.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Gotcha. Oh, so, it's both ways.
Yeah. It's the same thing everywhere you go. From what I hear, I don't know if that's with all teams. I do know on senior night, they bumped it up to 4.
Uh-huh. Wow, this is just wild. I'm gonna give you my final thoughts and let Tim finish up with this thing, Lou, but I will tell you this. We're going to do the best we can in this 4-week season, but boy, we're kind of overwhelmed right now in terms of trying to cover everything. But we'll check in with you again, and I'm also really, really, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm really looking forward to late August and early September for the beginning of the next football season when we can really get out there, you know?
Yeah, we are as well. But there's work to be done.
Yep.
That's for sure, but I hear you. Absolutely. I feel the same way.
All right, Tim?
I'll see you on the sidelines after the game on Friday night. I look the same, you know. So
yeah,
I stand by that.
Handsome as ever. He'll have his shorts on no matter what the weather.
No, I'm getting older these days. It's too cold. I'm wearing the shorts. I'm wearing a pair of khaki pants. That's that.
Oh no, Coach Betancourt's still in the shorts. So I don't know about you guys here.
Not Coach Ciccatelli. No way.
Hey Lou, man, it is great to talk with you. I'm so happy you're back, and I'm so happy you're taking care of the kids. It's not an easy job, and we really admire you for what you're doing.
You know what? And thank you for that compliment. And you know what? It's the same here. You guys have been great for high school football. You have. And you've made my team, they look forward to everything hearing you guys on the radio all the time. And it's just good stuff. And I miss you guys. So I'm glad I got a chance.
Excellent. Well, you won't miss us too much. Go ahead.
Last year to cover the team as much as I did and to chat with the kids. They're at practice. They're a great group of kids, Lou. You did a great job with them.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated, guys.
All right, Lou, good luck this week, and we will talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Be safe, Coach. Thank you.
All right, buddy.
All right, take care. That is Revere High School football coach Lou Ciccatelli, and it has been a while. It's funny, Tim, when Revere left and Lynn Classical and Lynn English switched over to the GBL, I had this nagging thing like, we're never going to see those guys again. We're never going to talk to those guys. And then I realized, wait a minute, why not? They're still in Revere. They're still in Lynn. So we can still do it. And it's great checking in with all those guys. I really appreciate that. So you're going to be able to go over the game?
I should be, yes.
All right. They have it somewhere in one of the schedules. It has Revere at Devert, but no, it's Revere is playing at Classical, and I think
is that a 5 o'clock? Because everybody's been playing 5 o'clock games.
You know that I don't know. We should have asked him, but I think it's English who is playing Everett to open up the season, but it's Revere and Classical, yeah, and Lynn English is playing Everett to open. I think it's at Everett to open up the season. So it's a four-game schedule, and again, this was precipitated by the fact that, as Lou was saying, so many towns, especially Lynn, were in that red zone, and they were not allowed to play, even though St. Mary's was. St. Mary's had their regular seasons, except for football, of course, which they just finished with, or they are finishing now with Fall 2. And we will be talking with Sean Driscoll this week at St. Mary's. The Greater Boston League doing some really, really clever and interesting the scheduling, if you will, and very creative in getting the kids to play winter sports for about 4 or 5 weeks that just finished, and now the fall sports are beginning. And I wouldn't have thought that was possible, because I mean, every week we talked to you, you kept saying it's a pandemic.
It is, and there's still people dying. There's still thousands of people getting, 60,000 people are being diagnosed with it every day. And yeah, the kids have made sacrifices. The coaches have made sacrifices.
That's the key.
They've done a great job, not as far as to come off, but we also saw the number, how many games got canceled because, you know, people didn't follow the rules. So, well, you know, it's 6 of 1, 6,500 of another. And, you know, I applaud the all those that were able to make it happen. But it didn't go off without its hitches.
Well, the good news is that so many kids did get to participate with their self-discipline. They're doing the right thing, and the coaches and parents and administrators all doing the right thing as well. We'll take a break, come back with Gary Larrabee. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday evening.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
What a hand lover. We measure up.
Okay, coming back right now with sports historian and golf writer Gary Larrabee, who is with us almost every single week of the year now. Thank goodness. It's great. Gary, how are you?
I am fabulous. How are you doing today?
Oh, man, fabulous. Yeah, beautiful day. I don't know if Tim got out. Tim, did you get outside today?
I was at Fenway Park.
Really?
Yeah, I watched the slaughter. It was great.
Ah, wow. Okay, then. Very good. Oh, that's right. You had to. It is Patriots Day. I forgot about that. I totally forgot.
Yeah.
Gary, what's up?
Well, I hope you guys are as happy as I was to see Stewart Cink win the Heritage Classic down there at Sea Island, Georgia, yesterday. He's 47 years old. It's the third time he's won on that golf course designed by Jack Nicklaus. And he's got a wife who's recovering from very serious cancer. And I think after this victory yesterday, we can give away all those emotions we may still hold, anti-emotions we might still hold for Stewart Cink, who, of course, was the man responsible for preventing Tom Watson from winning the British Open, the Open Championship, at the age of 59.
Mm-hmm.
So, Stewart, all is forgiven. Great, great performance this weekend down there at the Heritage. And I'm very happy for the guy.
Well, you know, Gary, he's certainly been a name that we haven't heard a whole lot of late again. And it's good to see some of those guys who used to be a bit more prominent on the tour come back and make a statement and knock some of these youngsters off their pedestals.
Yeah, he's been playing very well the last, I'm going to say, 18 months. He's been in the top 10 several times, and he's supposed to be just getting ready for the Champions Tour for the old Fuddy Duddies of 50 years of age and older. That tournament yesterday was won by the Ryder Cup captain, Steve Stricker, down in Naples, Florida. But I don't think these guys are going to be in any rush to welcome Stewart Cink to the Champions Tour in 3 years, because Stewart still gets some very serious game. And it was just a feel-good story yesterday, guys. His son was caddying for him, and just a very, very nice story to talk about the week after the Masters.
Well, I'm looking at his big wins, Gary, as you say, and then, you know, he won the Open, the British Open, what, in 2009. So, man, that's a long time between drinks of water.
It is, but he's done well, and he's very accomplished. He has won a major. I mean, how many good players, great players,
mm-hmm.
people won a major.
Yep.
And I just think that this gives him a lot more positive vibes, because those of us who remember that that Open Championship, we were so angry at Stewart Cink after he prevented Tom Watson from making extraordinary golf history. And let's see if he can do it again.
You with us, Tim?
Yeah, I fell asleep, sorry.
Okay.
I had to get up early to get to the Red Sox.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of good news locally, simply because the weather has been good. We haven't gotten an exceeding amount of rain, so courses must be up and in pretty decent condition.
Well, they're all in great shape, and the grass is growing, and it's been a wonderful early spring. We don't usually get early springs, but here we are. I think at least it's an on-time spring. It's not an early spring, and glad for that. But one other thing, fellas, I was going to talk about, we're talking about the PGA Tour, and we just learned a few days ago that Gloucester's own Josh Sala has given up the quest to try to make it on the PGA Tour after turning pro 7 years ago and playing on the Asian Developmental Tour for 6 years. He's given it up. He's going to try to regain his amateur status, and he won't play any competition this year, but he gave it a really good go. 6 years, guys, over there in some of those godforsaken Asian countries where you You'd be afraid to drink the water. You'd almost be afraid to breathe the air. But Josh was a survivor. He's now 30 years of age. And
wow.
We'll wish him the best coming
Absolutely.
Going forward. But this year he'll be just a working slob like the rest of us. And he'll work in his game in some form or fashion. But next year he'll hopefully get his reinstatement by the USGA for the beginning of next season. He has a lot to look forward to in 2022, not the least of which is trying to qualify for the U.S. Open, which is being played where, Tim? The country club in Brookline, right down the street.
Okay.
Oh, my. All right.
You said that he would pick up his amateur status again. Can you do that?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's a formal application. There's a lot of protocols involved. A lot of players do it when they can't make it as a playing professional. Jack Whalen from Myopia and Topsfield and the Pingree School, he's done it recently. So hasn't Anthony Delisio, Stephen Delisio's older brother. He went the pro route for a couple of years, never made any progress, so he's back as an amateur. It's just a standard procedure, and the USGA is pretty considerate. Especially in this day and age when there are 1,000 players who typically try to make it on the PGA Tour every year through qualifying and whatnot.
Right.
Such a small handful of guys make it. The USGA is quite lenient, I think, in that process of reinstating young players who had gone pro and wanted to go back now as an amateur.
Gary, is the tour capping the number of players?
Is the tour
capped?
Well, it's basically you either play the minor league tour, which is the Corn Ferry, which you have to play damn good to make it on the Corn Ferry tour. Never mind make it on the main PGA tour.
Right.
But they have qualifying processes in place. And it's a hard road. It's a very difficult road. Recently we got two players from Massachusetts right now, guys. Playing on the PGA Tour, and that's, of course, Rob Oppenheim, Salem-born and Andover-raised, and Richie Wawenski from Holyoke. We don't know too much about him, but he's won over $700,000, and he's in pretty good shape to regain his card for another year. Rob's only won like $250,000, and, of course, keep in mind, guys, this is a two-year process by which you have to determine that you can make it and finish in the top 100 when the FedEx playoffs come around, or basically have to play your way onto the tour by winning on the Corn Ferry Tour, which is not easy either. So many good players out there, guys. It's a real hard road, and Oppenheim and Wawenski are doing it, but Josh Sala is trying to do it a different way, and it didn't work out for him either.
Well,
will there be opportunities for him to come back and be a club pro, something like that?
Well, I don't think he wants to. He could retain his professional status and turn and seek a position.
Okay.
But he wants to go back to the amateur way of doing things. Presumably playing, still lives in Gloucester, I believe. He'll want to probably rejoin Bass Rocks. Several members from Bass Rocks and Myopia, where Josh did a lot of caddying in the younger days, helped fund his 6 years over in Asia. He was based in Bangkok, and it's just the way he had to do it. But no, he's going to go back and be an amateur for the rest of his life, and hopefully he'll be able to compete in 2022, but he won't be competing this year at all.
Got to get a hold of him. I'm sure he's got a tale to tell. Speaking of which, you have a feature coming up in this week's, a column coming up in the Salem News on Friday?
We do. We skipped last week. We're picking our spots this year, not necessarily going to go with a column every week, but we're going to be writing this week about 88-year-old Ron Kirby from Beverly, who has come out with a memoir about his amazing life, traveling the world with his wife Sally, also from Beverly, who just passed away last year. building golf courses. He worked for Robert Trent Jones Sr. He got Gary Player started in the design business, and he's now designed more than 300 golf courses. That's Gary Player I'm talking about.
Mm.
Ron's designed about 100. He's also redesigned and restored another 100. But it's a fantastic story of how he and Sally and their three children, you know, for the last 55, 60 years, traveled the world, and they had an extraordinary story to tell. And the fact that he's most famous, of course, guys, for Old Head, which is that amazing golf course over there in a promontory sticking out of the Atlantic Ocean in the southwestern island, just off Consal. He's got an amazing life for a guy from Beverly. And the book is a great read for anybody who's a golf fan, whether you're from the North Shore or not. And it's a fascinating story to read.
Looking forward to that one. That is going to be cool. Gary, we'll talk to you again next week.
I can't wait to see you in 7 days, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you so much, Gary.
Stay well.
All right. You too. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and his column coming up in the Salem News on Friday. Quick break, come back with Mike Grenier. We'll talk. No, actually, we've got to get Scott Cooper first, then Mike Grenier. So we'll take a quick break here and be right back. All right, we're back now with sports writer Scott Cooper, writing most recently for the Marblehead Reporter. So he's a Marblehead Reporter. Jim Kearns is with us.
Yeah, we're actually owned by USA Today right now.
Oh, okay. That sounds that's even more impressive, isn't it?
I have to update my resume.
A USA reporter. I love it. And Tim and I are just waddling through MSO here. So let's get started with your view of, I think, probably the most targeted team in the North Shore right now, and that is the Marblehead Magicians. They're at 6-0, scored 199 points, allowed 51, and as some would want to say, they haven't played their best game yet. But I know anecdotally, Scott, you've been a little hampered because of what we all have been by this damn virus. But what are your impressions?
Well, I've only missed one Marblehead football game. Their offense is really incredible, but you have to give credit to their defense as well, obviously. But I tried to get one of the guys to say, I spoke to several of the players and the captains about the upcoming game, and it's all pretty much along the company line. You know, we've got to play our best game. Swamps is going to be the best team we play, but they're mm-hmm. all, it's going to be a lot of fun this Friday.
Mm-hmm. Timmy, you with us?
No, I fell asleep again, Rick. Sorry.
Okay, well, when you...
Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I saw Swampscott and Beverly Saturday, and Swampscott's defense was just stout at the biggest moments of the game. They gave up some plays in the secondary that allowed Beverly to get down the field. But, boy, when Beverly get inside the 10-yard line, it got really tough going. They got inside the 5, it was even tougher.
Yeah. I imagine, you know, the pent-up energy that these kids have must be incredible. And Marblehead's obviously played 3 more games, but just, you know, these kids must be crawling out of their skin just to play. So just, and they're all the kids that I've talked to, the girls volleyball team, the ice hockey teams over the winter, the basketball teams, they are so glad to finally be out to play. I think it's just heightened the level of play, you know, that we've been able to see, because every game is so huge and so important to all, each and every single one of them.
Marblehead went up to Masco over the weekend and played a very, what's the word I'm looking for? It was just relentless, just a relentless game. There was no panic. There was they just wore them down. They looked very efficient. And it looked like, as we've seen all season long, Scott, Marblehead looks to be a really well-rounded team in the proverbial all three phases.
Yeah. Well, they've blown a few teams out by scoring really quickly early, and, you know, obviously they pulled ahead against Masconomet, but they had that first quarter the other night, the other afternoon, where they gave the ball up, they fumbled, you know, they ran out of time late in the first half, and they, you know, missed opportunities for two touchdowns, maybe a field goal, maybe three touchdowns, but so that was the focus, was cleaning up mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and completely dominated the quarters 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
So they better clean up those mistakes they made in the first quarter.
How good is Josh Robertson from your point of view? 17 out of 22 for 291 yards and 4 touchdowns against Masconomet. And, you know, you've seen a lot of QBs over there at Marblehead.
I watched him all winter playing basketball, so it's not surprising. The kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's very quick. He's very athletic. He doesn't seem intimidated at all. I mean, I spoke to him. When was last season, 2019?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah, well, so 2019, his opening game when he played up in North Andover, and they knocked off North Andover. The kid, you know, I spoke to him. I don't think anyone else spoke to him before I did, but, you know, and he just handled it all perfectly. You know, just he was ready to go. You know, and I would talk to James Duty, one of his receivers,
mm-hmm.
and they say they work so hard in practice, and they know what each other is thinking, as well as, you know, Cronin and Mitch Corral and guys, other guys, Miles Smith, people he's throwing passes to, and these kids that work so hard. And one of the things that I really caught my interest is when Jimmy Rudloff said, you know, we don't run to areas, we run to space. So these guys are running to space, and Robertson's able to find that space to hit the receivers. Did I make any sense with that?
Yeah, no. Coach has said that many times. And it takes some training to do that, and it takes some discipline, and as you say, some work together, some teamwork. Tim, you got anything else for Scott?
You know, one of the things I noticed, and it's set up very nicely, is Swampscott. When I saw the quarterback backpedaling after taking the handoff, I'm going, "Oh, this just looks like that slant pattern." And doesn't the wide receiver come back down the line, cut into the middle? And the quarterback just hit him in stride, and he just went turned upfield right away and then turned left to the pylon. And, I mean, nobody from Beverly touched the kid. I'm thinking, how many times have they seen them do that over the last 15, 20 years? My
yeah.
God, they worked that play to perfection.
We've been really fortunate because we get to see a lot of good quarterbacks,
mm-hmm.
hopefully, over the past few years. And this year, it's not an exception. The kid from Peabody is very good, and I apologize, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was excellent against Marblehead. A couple other
Sean Lynch, I think that is. I think it's Sean Lynch. Yeah, he had a big game. He had 267 yards, 3 touchdowns over the weekend. That was against Gloucester. And Tim, were you at that game, Tim?
No, I wasn't around.
Oh, okay. All right. So, Scott, will you be able to attend the Swampscott Marblehead game?
I don't know if I'm going to walk over Rick or take an Uber. You know what I mean?
All right.
I've got about 300 yards to go to the field.
Okay. All right. That sounds good, man. And I'm looking forward to reading about that. Scott,
we'll
check in with you very soon. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Tim.
All right. Stay safe, Scott.
Yeah,
oh, man. That is Scott Cooper writing for the Marblehead Reporter under the umbrella of USA Today. That is so cool. All right, one more quick break. We come back with Mike Grenier. This is North Shore Sports Night on this here Monday night. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, I'm doing good. Mike Grenier, sports writer extraordinaire. Tim Kearns is with us. I'm Rick Moore. This is MSO News Sports, and this is North Shore Sports Night. And, Mike, I get the first question, then I'm going to let Tim ride with it. What do you see do you see a change in the chemistry in the Celtics? Everybody knows they're on a 4 or 5 game winning streak, whatever it is, an infusion of some different blood. But what's your perspective?
My perspective is they're just catching fire at the right time. And I mean, the chemistry question is a difficult one only because, well, for example, right now the Celtics are playing the Chicago Bulls. They're missing Marcus Smart with a non-COVID illness. Kemba Walker isn't playing, I think because of the same reason. The players haven't been together at different times this year because of COVID, and that includes Jason Tatum, who has been just about the best player in the NBA for the past couple of weeks, you know. So I think it's hard to gauge the chemistry question at this point. However, it does come down to the chemistry on the court has certainly gotten better. The guys looking for each other and playing for each other, that has certainly gotten better in the last couple of weeks. They're playing really well right now, and so they're kind of playing at the way they need to play if to avoid a place in the Eastern Conference standings where, you know, they want to get down to that fourth spot. And I don't think they can overtake the Milwaukee Bucks who are in the number three spot because it's only a few, there's about 14, 15 games left. However, if they finish in the number four spot, that means home court advantage in the first round. And I'll tell you what, Saturday night's game against the Golden State Warriors was one of the best games you could ever hope to see. You know, Stephen Curry getting 47 and Jason Tatum getting 44. They looked like true superstars. And Kemba Walker came up with a big fourth quarter. He finished with 26 points. So they're definitely playing better. They're playing with more confidence. Jaylen Brown, who just hit a jumper just now, he had 40 in the previous game. So they're just playing a heck of a lot better. And they're doing this, obviously, with Evan Fournier still out with COVID protocols, and he could certainly add 16, 17 points a game off the bench. So I like the way it's trending, and Robert Williams is still out, and they're still winning without him. So things are going pretty well for what you could hope for late in the season as they try to, you know, sort of get ready for the playoffs here with only 14, 15 games left.
You know, Mike, and I think you're hitting at it. The key word for them is consistency. They don't have to blow people out. They just have to score one more point than the other guys, and they have to make a defensive stand at some point in the game at a critical juncture. And again, that's all mindset. It's what you bring to the floor. It's what you bring every single night, thinking, you know, I'm going to make that play. You know, maybe not look for the shot, but look for the pass, and doing so in a decisive fashion. I think when they start questioning what they're doing, that's when they get into trouble.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what, Tim, I think Saturday was a perfect example of how you can incorporate guys quickly into a lineup. Jabari Parker, a guy who was a number two draft pick in 2014, was, you know, obviously slowed down by two very bad ACL injuries, and a lot of people thought he was finished. Now, he'd literally been with the Celtics for 24 hours or 36 hours. He goes out there Saturday night and gets 11 points in 15, 16 minutes, and they were actually looking for him to post low a couple of times in key situations, and he scored for them. It shows you that when guys are looking out for each other and want to play together, it can be done. I mean, Jabari Parker literally, I mean, hadn't had a practice with the team, and he contributed in a big way to a win over the Golden State Warriors Saturday night. So I got to ask you this one, Tim and Rick. I don't know if you heard, at the end of Saturday night's game, which, of course, was nationally televised, and Curry had his 47 points, and he had 11 three-pointers, okay, and Jason Tatum had 44 on the other side for the winning Celtics team. Mark Jackson, who's on the national telecast, a former NBA player, and a good one at that, made this statement where he said, "No one has had more impact on the NBA in the last 40 years than Stephon Curry." And I'm going, what? I'm going,
who?
What? I mean, I think he was in the moment, and he said that because Curry had 47, he had 11 three-pointers. But you're talking last 40 years, Curry, granted, has had three championships. But right away I'm thinking, okay, locally, Larry Bird, three titles.
Yeah.
Certainly had an impact. Magic Johnson, who came up in the same years, you know.
Yeah.
Five championships. Shaquille O'Neal, four championships. How about this guy named Michael Jordan?
Michael Jordan.
Six championships.
LeBron.
LeBron, four championships. So what kind of outrageous statement is that? He's been the most impactful player of the last 40 years. That's just absolute craziness from a guy who should know better. Give Curry his props. He's been a great player. He's in the middle of a hot run right now. He's got like something like 40 or 45 threes in the last four or five games, going crazy. But so is Jason Tatum. And as far as impact on the last, I didn't even include Dr. J.
Rick, oh, yeah.
Have Philadelphia roots, and Dr. J brought the whamma jamma type play to basketball in the 80s and,
you know, certainly made those Philadelphia 76er teams very powerful. So I think that Stephen Curry has some company as far as impactful players over the last 40 years.
Well, you know, Jackson himself, as you guys know, was not an impactful player. He was a good secondary player on a very good Knicks team.
That's right.
You know, but you know, you want to list guys you want to start a team with. He's not one of them.
No, he's not one of them. And you know, Curry is up there as a great player, but he's certainly, I think, you know, all those guys we just mentioned, Bird, Jordan, Shaq, Kobe, they won more titles. You know, they won more titles. Bird won three, the equal amount as Curry. But all those other guys actually have won more championships, and including LeBron, have won more championships than Stephon Curry.
Hey, Mike.
And right now, the Warriors are 28-29.
Yeah, really. I'm looking at tonight's lineup, and who the heck is Luke Kornet?
Yeah, Luke Kornet was the guy they acquired as part of like the multiplayer trade.
Just okay.
At the trade deadline, and he's like a 7-footer who can block shots, and he can hit the occasional three, and he has to play tonight because Tristan Thompson is the starter, and Kornet backs him up. And I mean, the starting lineup tonight included the rookie Peyton Pritchard.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
You know, and Langford playing right.
Semi-Ojeleye,
and you got some key, you know, Marcus Smart hardly ever misses a game.
Yeah.
But he has a non-COVID illness, and I believe Kemba Walker, who's starting to play a heck of a lot better, is also down, not because of a knee problem. They're not trying to protect his knee. I think he's out with an illness as well.
Oh, my.
So, fortunately, both Jaylen Brown and Tatum are playing tonight, and we should talk, I mean, how about Tatum? How well has he played in the last couple of weeks, averaging like 35 points a game? You know, a 53-point game, a 44-point game on the big stage Saturday night. I mean, he really matched Curry basket for basket the other night. He hit threes. He hit all kinds of double-team shots, triple-teams at one time. He's really playing awesome.
Well, the other thing, too, I'm looking at the stats right now, Mike, because I'm not too versed in anything else, but in the first quarter tonight, he also has 4 defensive rebounds, and 4 assists already to go with 6 points. No points. He hasn't scored, but he's got 4 and 4. And that's the thing you're talking about, impactful players. You know what I was thinking of, Tim and Mike? I was thinking of the night that Larry Bird went, he had an offer shooting. No points, but he still helped win the game. He was amazing.
Oh, sure. I mean, because Larry Bird was a very good, you know, above average rebounder. And he was a sneaky defensive player, get around somebody's back and get a steal. You know, he was just an all-around, I mean, his knowledge of the game was just incredible. And to this day, you can look at his highlight films on YouTube or anywhere else and see what a great all-around player he was. Mm-hmm. You know, so I kind of, but as far as the Celtics is concerned right now, I like the way they're trending. And, you know, we'll see when they get everybody back, like Evan Fournier and Robert Williams, and Kemba, when he can play in these playoffs and play back-to-back games. You know, I think right now they're playing about as well as they have the potential to play even better when they get these injured and ill players back.
Tim.
Okay, went to the Sox game today. The goodness of a buddy of my Sox, he got me a ticket. And quite an offensive explosion on the part of the Sox today to square off that series with Chicago. And the ball looked really good.
Yeah, well, but Tim, here's the thing. You didn't see their yellow uniforms like they wore over the weekend.
Oh, I saw those, and I was like, what the hell is that? I found out what it was.
Yeah, now, Rick, I'd like to get your take on this, too, because when I saw those yellow uniforms with the blue hats, to me, they looked like people who would greet fans coming into Six Flags and give them a coupon for 75 cents off at Dairy.
Well, I saw the promo a week or so ago, and when the sound was off on my TV, and when I saw the uniforms, I went, what? And then when I heard what they were doing, I said, okay, that's a nice tribute.
Right, true.
But, God, please don't wear those every day.
But, you know, it's funny. I thought they were kind of, obviously, in honor of the marathon and all that. So why didn't they wear them today? I mean, over the weekend.
Yeah.
But I could not stand why they didn't wear them today when it's traditionally marathon.
Yeah.
You know?
Don't know. Tim might.
because maybe it's because of the tradition of, you know, playing, and they always played in, you know, their home white. So I don't know.
I think somebody said that today on the broadcast. They did say they were traditionally going to go with their marathon traditional uniforms.
I see. Okay.
I think that's right. And you know, they were, you know, they hosted the families and victims yesterday in an amazing tribute. And it's still, I don't know, it's still, one of the things, I was in Ireland when it happened, and we were watching at 8 o'clock at night, we were watching the marathon live, because there were 100 runners from Killarney during the day, and it was, which was 3 o'clock, you know, Boston time, we were watching it, and we saw it happen, and I don't know, the solidarity afterwards. One of the things that sticks out in my mind, guys, is the New York Yankees. Remember they had a pennant out at Yankee Stadium that said Boston Strong? Remember that?
Yes. Yes, I do. I do. And to make it if I can just get a personal story in on that awful, awful day, my daughter was supposed to be at, my daughter Nicole, who's now 35 years old, she was supposed to be at the finish line.
Whoa.
When the bombs went off. However, she was pregnant. And she had morning illness and didn't get to go to the marathon that day. And I was in Florida, didn't find that out till later in the day, because my mother, who at the time was like 86 years old, and myself, we were very concerned about my daughter. But only because she was pregnant, that was the only reason she was not at the finish line. So she might have been in harm's way for all we knew. We were lucky. And obviously some other families, including the family from Salem, the Richard Finn, was not nearly as fortunate, and I'm glad that their memory is kept alive every year by with tributes and all that, because it was such an incredibly awful catastrophe, you know.
8 years ago. Tim, were you in, you wouldn't have been in school. That's a holiday, right?
Right, yeah. I honestly don't recall where I was, but I know the, you know, as soon as you hear it, you had the TV on and you sat there incredulous as to, wow, you know, it brings it home that you're never as safe as you think you are. And that,
right.
You know, when you see it happen and it's in another city or another state, another country, and you go, wow, glad that doesn't happen around here. And all of a sudden it's in your own backyard. And it just makes you realize how close sometimes you are.
No doubt about it.
Well, I think the other thing too, Tim and Mike, as we wrap this thing up here, the COVID thing in high school sports, the way that the coaches, the teachers, the administrators, the parents in the MIAA and the state and so on are handling this, there's a life lesson there that ties into just what you said, Tim, because the coaches to a person, each coach has said, well, we don't know if this is our last game. We don't know if we've played our last game, so you got to go out there and play as though it's going to be. And man, if that ain't a life lesson, I don't know what is.
You know, actually, your previous guest here from the Marblehead Reporter put it nicely and said the kids and the coaches are valuing each game that they play because they went so long without it,
mm-hmm.
and now they're treating each game as if it's a playoff game because they're so happy to simply be out there competing and playing with their friends.
I feel that way when I get to go out to dinner now.
Absolutely.
Coach, anything last year?
No, just that, you know, the Red Sox was very good, and I mentioned to my buddy as we were sitting up in the upper deck, I said, you know, it's kind of nice to look out there and see the Yankees at 5-10, but they're only 4.5 game behind the Red Sox, so
yeah.
They're not that far away. So the record, you know, sounds really crappy.
Well, Tim, quick question, if we can fit this one in, Rick. Tim, you were there today. You know, I haven't been to a game since COVID started. What was it like to be in the ballpark with, what, approximately 3,000 or 4,000 people?
Yeah, there were...
It's a strange feeling, I imagine.
They allowed 4,500 people in, according to my buddy's father's friend. We were talking to him. And he said he's never been to Fenway Park when there were so few people. Even back in the old days, you know, he was going back to the late 70s, early
80s. I have. In 1966, I went to a game.
When the clock was dead, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Let's go back a few years more.
No,
really bad.
Tim, Mike, 1966, the summer of 66, the year I graduated
from high school.
It was ninth that year. I got in a car on a Friday night. Me and my buddies, we went to the Fenway Park, and we sat right behind home plate. And if there were 2,000 people there, I'd be surprised.
Because
they're talking about going to, first games and all that. And I said, first game I came to, my father walked my brother and I up to the lower seating level, and he pointed out this guy in right field named Jackie Jensen.
There you go. Number four.
Who took the train to every away game because he was afraid of flying.
He hated to fly.
Won the RBI crown.
And then I rattled off the starting infield of Malzone, Brasseur, Schilling, and Pete Runnels.
Wow.
And then I outfield Gary Geiger and Jensen, of course. And I said, I can't remember if Yaz was in the outfield or if it was Teddy. So I couldn't remember what year exactly was. But I had most of the starting team.
Well, they had some really bad teams. Yeah, as we all know, they had some really bad teams in that era. And all of a sudden, in 1967, it was a magical season.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that some other night. Meantime, Mike, we value your insight and your analysis, and hope you can do it again with us next Monday.
Right, and let's remember that Stephon Curry is not the most impactful player of the last 7 years.
We'll see if we can come up with at least one other name, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right, guys.
Hey, Mike,
thank you so much. Great that you got to go to that Red Sox game, Tim. Happy for you.
Yeah, thanks.
Take care, Mike. Be safe.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. That's Mike Grenier. Stephon Curry, dear Lord. I don't know. Tim, what are your final thoughts tonight, man?
I'm going to put in a vote for Dave Cowens.
Oh, he was something, too. When he get that shark's eyes, that look, man, get out of his way. All right, Coach, you going to any more games this week?
I'm going to get to Lynn Classical.
Okay.
I want to talk to Lou, get that cute little face of his on the recorder.
There we go. Well, make sure your batteries are charged for your camcorder.
I sent the previous videos in an email.
Didn't get the ones from your phone. Got the ones from your camcorder a couple of weeks ago.
Right, but you didn't get the ones from my phone.
Did not get this week's, no. And the ones we got last week, if you remember, I didn't get them when you said you sent them. I got one, but not the other.
I hate this Apple because I can't upload music and I can't seem to download the video.
Well, they're very proprietary. They're not an MP3, MP4 format. You have to convert it. So that's why we use the camcorders. But that's okay. You talk to everybody, and thank you for setting up the interview with Lou Ciccatelli. I appreciate that. Great talking with him.
One of my favorite guys.
Absolutely. And we got a lot more to cover next week as we transition from Fall 2 in the NEC to Fall 2 in the GBL, and Fall 2 is getting over with in the CAL as well, and we'll start spring sports next week, but we'll have a lot to talk about the final football games in Fall 2. If you followed that, you're better at it than I am. Coach, we'll talk to you later.
All righty, Mr. Moore. We'll talk to you during the week.
All right, Tim. Take care. Stay safe.
All right, brother. You too.
Good night. That is Tim Kearns, our MSO sports analyst, and, of course, our Ambassador of Goodwill. I'm Rick Moore, and all of a sudden just hit the wall. So I want to thank you for listening. Thank you to all of our guests. And also on behalf of Bill Newell and Bill Proposky and Tim Kearns, I want to wish you a very pleasant good evening. Be safe. We'll see you next Monday. And hey, man, visit the website msonewsports.com and email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Thank you very much.